Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where we go through every single episode of The Mad Men and talk about it. So excited for everyone listening, enjoying our second episode of this long-awaited podcast.
Everyone out there in podcast land.
Every little who in Whoville. Every little Jew in Jewville. Every little screw in Screwville. And so on and so forth. Thank you for listening. Please give us 5 stars in a review. Please go to Spotify and give us good reviews. Please comment on episodes. You can do that now. You can comment
just
individual.
Engage. We need your engagement
we
so bad.
We need your engagement. Please engage.
Please.
Engage. very excited to talk with our guest today, who is, you know him, you love him, from being the producer of such podcasts as this one. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, welcome comedian Brent Flyberg.
Oh, hello. Hi, fellas. How are we today?
Hi. Oh, so good.
I'm so stoked that we're back. On a scale of 1 to 10, how back are we, Brent Flyberg?
1960. That's how, from 1 to 10, we're 1960.
Dude, we're rocking it. We're so far past 10 that we're back in time.
Yes, sir.
To the beautiful 1960s. Brent Flyberg, thank you for being the guest.
Of course.
I also want to ask you, opening question, what's your favorite advertisement?
Probably the Snickers Hangry commercial. Mm.
Yeah, those are good.
Those are good. No, actually, I take that back. It's an Eagle Hardware ad. It's a regional hardware store in the Pacific Northwest. It's an Eagle Hardware store ad from like 1996 where Edgar Martinez has made a lamp out of a baseball bat and he turns it on and he says, get it? It's a light bat.
Oh, that is really good.
Yeah,
that is really good. It's got baseball fun in there.
Uh-huh.
And it's got supporting local business. Mm-hmm. All things that I approve of personally.
It's funny that you brought up the Snickers ad because I always wanted to do an ad called Hangry Hangry Hitler. Where,
Hitler's, you don't even have to explain it.
Hitler's giving a speech and his friends are like, you know, you get a little, you know, Adolf, you get a little anti-Semitic when you're hungry. And then they give him a Snickers bar.
And he just starts reading the Torah and going, there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's a lot of, you know, killing
babies.
What I
really wanted to do was paint more castles.
I mostly agree with the ideology. Wow.
And you know what? If the trains are a little late, they're a little late.
Big deal. Stop and smell the flowers. Smells the Edelweiss or whatever. I like those commercials. I've always been jealous of Snickers eaters because I'm allergic to...
Sounds like a slur for some reason.
Yeah, it does sound like a slur. It's not
bunch
like a homophobic...
fucking Snickers eaters moved in down the block.
Yeah, it's not homophobic. It's not racial. Literally, I'm allergic to peanut butter. So the only kind of Snickers I've ever had is like the almond version of it, which is so, I love it. It's so delicious that I can only imagine how good the peanuts one is.
Oh, that's right. You're allergic.
I'm allergic. Yeah. So I can't even, cause I get hangry.
I think almonds are better than peanuts. I'll say it.
Wow.
I don't know if I agree in a candy context. Mm. I think maybe in a more. That's holistic true. Way, but I think an almond and a Snickers, it's not as good. It does taste like they're trying to make a healthy Snickers.
Oh, you don't want to have almonds and like Thai food, but you know, like
exactly.
There's a lot of good
right. See, this is with me. I feel like I'm missing out on what the peanut adds because I feel like what almonds add to things for me. I'm like ooh. Extra food or whatever. It's like protein, I think. I'm not really sure. But like
fiber?
Fiber?
Food.
Yeah, it's like more
food.
More food better. I like when food's more. I just want to say that voice that I'm doing is a child. It's a child's voice, not an adult.
Yeah, he's not doing like a stereotypical Snickers eater voice.
No,
yeah,
it's not a Snickers eater voice. I swear to God.
Licking windows, eating Snickers.
So, Brent, have you seen Mad Men before?
I have. I saw it all. I saw all of it during quarantine, like deep lockdown. My roommate bought all the Blu-rays at some point. Nice. And so we plowed through all, what is it, like 195 episodes?
Yeah, yeah, 2,000 episodes.
And probably like a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I was having a blast. I would pour myself, every time they poured a drink, I would pour myself a drink. So I don't remember a lot of it but I would pour myself a drink, and then I would, my traditional TV watching pose is to like lay down on the floor and maybe do a little foam roll, maybe do a little stretch. Yeah. So that was how I watched all of Mad Men.
Yeah, you gotta do that like pigeon, like the rolling
pigeon.
Oh,
the pigeon? Mm. Oh, yeah, babe. That's good stuff.
Get those glutes loose.
Gotta get those glutes. My freaking hip flexors? Oh, man, I gotta roll those out.
My wife does a lot of the back rolling thing.
Yeah.
And it looks really good. I'm realizing that I'm leading a really sedentary life. Like, I'm like trying to bend down for stuff, and I'm just like, does the hamstring include the whole leg? Because why does my butt hurt when I bend?
Yeah. Well, so the hamstring for me includes my entire. I only started getting into stretching because like my back is all jacked up like an old.
That's
ass
not
man.
True.
And if I don't, I just have a hurt back always.
Mm-hmm. I remember years ago when we started podcasting together. I used to stretch you out pretty good.
Dang, dude.
Stretch out that butthole. You know what I mean. So a lot of people rate this show as like whenever there's like a TV best TV shows ever listing, there's always like the top five always seems to be like The Sopranos, The Wire, Mad Men, Breaking Bad. And then sometimes it'll just be like, you know, Cheers, because they're like, well, we got to put a sitcom in there and we got to do something. You
Cheers
know,
is really good. I watched
before
it.
2000
a few years ago. Holds up. Absolutely holds up.
I would absolutely rewatch Cheers. Or I guess for me, it would be watching it like sequentially for the first time, because like Cheers is one of those shows that I just
saw in reruns.
Right.
Yeah.
Random episodes. And, you know, I got the basics of it. But the jokes, you know, were great.
If we did that for the next series, we would be set for another decade.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's like 500 episodes or something.
Oh God. That's a problem with network TV is like back in the day, they were just like cranking out like 24 episode seasons. And it was just like, I mean, I'm glad people got work, but at the same time, why do I have to work?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But this is not a show about Cheers. Oh wait, no, I was gonna ask, how do you rate Mad Men?
When I finished it, it was my number one. And I still kind of, because I got to rewatch it to feel like I can definitely say that. So I'll come back to you at the end.
Yeah, you
could have
just been drunk.
Yeah, I could have been just that I was drunk and I didn't have to go to work for 9 months. So maybe I was just in a good mood.
But
as much as I loved The Sopranos, Mad Men was just sort of more, it was just kind of more vibrant or something. I don't know. There was something about it that really, it definitely looks better.
Yeah. Everyone looks great. Everyone's having fun. Yeah. Everyone who's a man is having fun. it's a great show. And so number one, you think number one. Okay.
I think it might be my number one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not my number one, but it is so many people's number one that I'm like interested to see if it can convert me. So this will be a journey. You know?
Ask me after a different episode than this one.
Sure. Speaking of a different episode than this one, let's talk about this one, but we cannot talk about this one without first playing the Mad Yourself a Man theme song. This is still funny to me.
Mad yourself man. Mad man. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, once again, we're going to be talking about from season one of The Madman, episode two, Ladies Room. And this episode came out July 26, 2007. Vince, top of your head, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
I am a patient boy. I wait. Sorry, I was just doing Waiting Room, but it's by Fugazi, but it's Ladies Room because that's the name of the episode.
Why don't you start doing the song? Synopsis.
Oh, yeah. Synopsis of this episode. This episode is all about figuring out what women want in order to sell them deodorant that they buy for their stinky boyfriends. And it turns out what women want is to go to psychotherapy because they're always being sexually harassed.
Yeah, that's true. That's both what the show is about and, you know what? It's kind of what life's about. Mm-hmm. But Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
Huh? Can you parse that for me a little bit? Can you unpack
that? Well, I was, because originally, you know, we used to say, what was happening at the time that this episode came out? And we're not doing that for this new news machine segment, which we still need to name. We're now doing what was happening at the time that the episode was set in.
Yeah.
Should I figure out a better way to say it? Is that what you're telling me?
I was giving you a hard time.
Do you want me to do the copy? I'm going to play the sting, you fucking idiot.
I wiped my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
News machine.
That's right. The News Machine. This episode came out July 26th, 2007. So we're going all the way back to July 26th, 1960. I honestly spent a few hours like just going back reading newspapers like from 1960 because like you really do get the sense like, A, we used to be a proper country.
Yeah,
like,
we used to build stuff.
The amount of information in one day's newspaper in 1960 was staggering.
It was like all the actual news.
It was all the news that was fit to print, and they had a lot of room to print. I feel like the newspaper had to be at least three times as long it is now. And it's funny because, you know, dads used to talk about like, oh, yeah, every morning I read the New York Times.
I was like, the whole thing?
You had like, you must have had like 2 hours to just sit there with your coffee and relax, and then you go to work and you like, you know, slap a woman on the butt and
right,
and take
whatever jobs were back then.
You know, like it seemed great. So it's like there's this dueling.
Were jobs just like you read for 2 hours while your wife gets your baby up, wipes it, takes it to, you know, daycare. Oh, no, doesn't even do that. Teaches your child. You go to work. You sit there and you sit at your desk and you just go, secretary, suck my dick, suck my dick, suck my dick until lunch. You eat lunch, you come back, and then you do that again. You drive home drunk.
And you go, boy, I had such a hard day. Could you quit your yakking for a while?
Yeah, quit your yakking, woman. My throat hurts from yelling, suck my dick.
So there's like two, and this is kind of the theme of the show too, which is that like, A, we used to be a proper country, and B, everyone was completely out of their minds. Like, we were a proper country filled with child brides and psychopaths.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Reading the newspaper is wild because so much was happening. There were like everybody was reading an incredible amount of information on it on a daily basis, and like that information is basically about how people were out of their minds. I just chose a couple of things that were happening. The Republican convention is going on. I believe we're like a day away from Dick Nixon getting chosen over Rockefeller, which I believe is depicted in the show. The Soviets have shot down a spy plane over the Arctic. Shit's going down in the Congo with Lumumba.
Oh, right.
So much is happening. Fidel Castro is just taking over in Cuba, all this stuff. But you know, like that's a lot more information. Here we go. For this, we got to pick like, you know, just like a slice of life.
Right.
This is from the New York Daily News once again. Headline, he ditched instead of hitched her. Takes old car, comma, new girl.
Wow. I love this because he said this is a New York Daily News.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is like New York 1960. Let's say there's what, 5 million, 6 million, 7 million people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, this is a story about a guy.
Yeah. So like the newspapers, they were printing, there's entire pages that are just the entire text of a speech that someone gave at the Republican National Convention, like yeah. multiple. And wow. these, and we're talking, you know, these are like, I don't know, 1500 word speeches. Like they're long.
Jesus.
And they printed all of it in there. And they're not.
I guess how else would you? Yeah, how else would you?
Yeah, you would never know the speech happened.
There's no freaking TikTok to check later.
There's no TikTok. There's no videos with captions on them. Yeah. There's no Netflix streaming service, Disney Plus, Paramount.
Yeah.
You know. Meanwhile, what I mean?
But we're you know if we want a slice of life, we go to he ditched instead of hitched her, takes old car, new girl. Freewheeling to romance in an auto given to him as an engagement present by the father of his previous girlfriend, oh, Angelo D'Agostino, 21, a
D'Agostino.
Far Rockaway, yeah, a Far Rockaway counterman, has eloped with a 15-year-old girl, Queens police were notified yesterday. The girl is Melissa Tissenbaum, reddish blonde and due back in Far Rockaway High School this fall as a junior. Left behind was dark-haired Rose Iucci, whose engagement to Angelo was announced at a big party at her home, 424 Clinton Street, Brooklyn, on her 18th birthday. How it started. Rose says she and Angelo squabbled at her home Friday night because, quote, he didn't say hello to my mother, unquote. After a phone...
Yeah.
After a phone conversation which didn't help matters, she returned the engagement ring Sunday afternoon to his parents' home at 319 Carroll Street. But Angela wasn't there, and he kept the car. That night, he took off with it and Melissa. Pop comes calling. The case came to police ears yesterday when Melissa's father, Philip, of 2914 Beach Channel Drive, Far Rockaway.
Okay, can I just stop you right there? Why are they giving out home addresses?
Very weird. Yeah,
that's
it's
crazy.
Very
weird.
That is so weird.
Well, you got to know where the 15-year-old girl lives.
Well, yeah. First of all, it's good that they just are putting 15-year-olds' addresses on the yeah. in the newspaper. That is normal. Holy shit.
Tissenbaum reported he had received a letter which his daughter had left with a girlfriend for mailing, advising that she and Angelo were going away to get married.
Wait, who's Tissenbaum? I missed that.
Tissenbaum is the 15-year-old girl.
Okay, got it.
In Far Rockaway. Sure. I don't know the fellow and didn't know that my daughter knew him, police quoted Tissenbaum. He asked that an alarm be sent out for the couple.
Oh, shit.
Said Rose. They went away in a 1950 Plymouth sedan, which my father gave Angela when our family got a new car. But that's all right. I wouldn't want him now.
Is that all right? How good is America doing? They're like, eh, take it.
Yeah, it's a throwaway car.
Heading, wants gifts return. Rose took a somewhat more critical view of Angelo's handling of their engagement presents. She said quite a few were received at the May 22nd party and that Angelo took them all. She hopes they can be returned.
Well, this is what happens when you try to marry an Italian. I didn't want to be the one to say it.
I mean, like you think about this, you know, this suave country on the rise full of all these literate people, and it's like there's still 20-year-olds marrying 15-year-olds, and that's yeah. like a normal thing. And I don't know, it kind of gives you insight about like why everyone's cheating on their spouses in this show.
I feel like we were like a just strictly pedophile based country until like 1998 when we finally were like, Jerry Seinfeld, what are you doing with that high schooler? It was like the first yeah. time that everyone was like, that's weird, right?
Yeah. I don't even know if it's pedophilia so much as like you're a 19-year-old dude and you want to get laid, so you have to like propose marriage to a 14-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, what? You're right. It's normal. Yeah.
Not normal, but you know, like they didn't have dating, I guess. You married the first lady that...
Yeah,
caught your eye, and then you're already like in the suburbs with a full time job and a 2-car garage
right,
by the time
yeah.
you're 22.
Yeah, fucking A. Oh God. I also shout out to Terry Teresa D'Agostino from The Wire. I wonder if you come from the same stock. You know,
she's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
So yeah, I mean, they were like, hey, we got to get married and have kids fast. We're all going to be dead by 47 from all the
yeah,
smoking
that's right.
and drinking.
That's right. All we do is smoke and drink. We're trying this new drug. It's called speed. It'll make you speed through life. Anything else, or is that it?
Oh, hold on. There's another crazy one here. I gotta read it, because just to like deepen the everybody in this country was like a child pretending to be an adult. Here's one from the New York Times. Airman's troubled wife gets help from the top. Denver, July 29th. The 17-year-old wife of an airman at Lowry Air Force Base successfully enlisted the help of President Eisenhower today. Whoa. President Eisenhower, visiting Denver for a few days, was leaving his suite at the Brown Palace Hotel. As he stepped to his limousine in front of the hotel, Mrs. Betty Steed of Mesquite, Texas, rushed up to him and started to tell her her problem. She had scarcely started, however, when she broke into tears and was unable to continue. Whoa. President Eisenhower patted her on the shoulder and directed Secret Service agents to get her story. She told the agents that her husband, Norman, 20, whose home is in Dallas, had recently been assigned to Lowry for basic training. Under regulations, he is required to live on the base. Mrs. Steed had to live off the base. She decided to take her case to the president. When President Eisenhower got a preliminary report from the Secret Service, he instructed his Air Force aide, Colonel William G. Draper, to investigate.
Draper!
Yeah.
Hey.
Colonel Draper and Mrs. Steed went to Lowry, where they conferred with top officials at the base. They talked to her and her husband. They talked to her, and her husband will be off the base tonight, James C. Haggerty, the White House press secretary, told newsmen. He said Airman Steed had been granted permission to live off the base for the duration of his stay at Lowry.
I'm sorry. Just so I'm clear, this story is about someone who tracked down the literal president of the United States.
A 17-year-old bride of a 20-year-old army
right,
guy.
Right, right. I mean, you
took
know.
Took her case to the president and was like, hey.
Hey, I want to cuddle. I want to
yeah.
live with my husband, and yeah. And they won't let us. And he
and
was
he
just
was like make
that's
it so.
Absurd.
yeah.
That is
that guy. That guy's got to be so pissed. He was like, oh, babe, I'm so sorry. I can't live with you. I got to go live on the base
it's
with
okay.
my boys.
I talked to the president, and the president. Yeah, I found the president.
I would have been like, can we get her lobotomized?
Well, we don't know what happened after this. So
yeah, I can't
is.
Imagine it was good. I just like to believe everything worked out and that
kind
he was
of
happy.
Amazing how much of this news is domestic.
Yeah, it's like based on like
disputes?
Wifey.
Yeah,
with teenagers, literal teenagers.
yeah, news that teens made. Fuck, yeah. man. I feel like now the only news that teens make is school shootings. You know what I mean?
this country's gone
to hell in a handbasket.
Wokeness.
This country is woke. All right, and that's the news machine.
That's been the news machine.
And we will eventually come up with a name for that. This is a podcast about good copy, and at some point we will do some. And yeah, so this is an episode called Ladies Room. And it is about what a woman wants, which is why, as I said the last episode, I'm not doing a song for every single episode of this show. But what I will do is like do little bits of the parody lyrics. So this.
Oh, good.
This is the Draper D story. What a woman wants, what a woman needs, is to talk to a spy disguised as a therapist. And I'm thanking you for selling deodorant. So this episode, so much happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is an episode where things happen. We have Betty, who is revealed to be someone who might be having a little bit of anxiety. And then there's, of course, Peggy, who's revealed to be someone who might be sick and tired of being molested. And then there's Dawn, who's spending the episode trying to figure out what women want. And as a viewer, I can say it's probably not to be cheated on. So, tell me, Vince, what did you think of this episode?
This is I don't think I would have I'm surprised that I kept watching Mad Men after this episode to be honest,
like,
because it looks good. I find it to be a very mid episode, but like the dialogue is such that I don't know what I was supposed to be getting from the dialogue in half of the scenes. It's like everyone was speaking in riddles and I needed like a 60s scat speak to English dictionary to parse what the fuck they were talking about.
Interesting. What's an example of that? What do you mean?
Like, did Kurt Cobain write this fucking episode? just everything. Like, it just doesn't, like I sort of understood where they were going, but I didn't quite. Like, it starts out, you know, Betty and Dawn and everybody's talking at the table. The women leave. What's his name?
Roger Sterling.
Roger Sterling's the only person whose dialogue makes sense in this episode.
Yeah. He's great.
And yet, like in the first scene, he's like, I think I know more about your wife than mine. And I'm like, was she babbling? Like we didn't see her babble. Like, this is just a button to a thing that didn't happen.
Oh yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Then they go into the bathroom. The bathroom attendants say, those purses get any smaller and we're going to starve. And you're like, what? Because they can't fit money into the purses? I don't entirely understand that. I think
sandwiches. Yeah, that's usually what you do with tip a bathroom attendant with a purse full of sandwiches. both of those things.
One more better example.
Okay, please.
You know, the boys are fooling around with the deodorant. They're spraying. And then Cooper shows up at Bert Cooper, his first scene. And he says, you know, I thought the naval vibe in here was because of Sterling, which that part I got. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fooling around.
I have this clip actually. And I think it has the line that you're going to say.
Yeah.
All right. Here it is.
I always thought it was Sterling who was responsible for the Navy attitude around this place.
Brazier account. Just figured out we can't sell them to men.
So much yarn, so little time.
Like, what the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea
what either of those lines mean.
Well, I mean, you know, he's saying he always thought Sterling was the reason.
That part I got. That line.
You mean the Brazier account?
Brazier account. We finally figured out we can't sell them to men. Okay, over my head.
That's a joke.
Sure.
Right, but I don't know what it's...
I don't get it.
Because they're not selling bras, right? This Gillette, they're doing a...
No, they're not selling bras.
It's for women, right? It's
a women's... What does bras have to do with them, like, holding a guy down and spraying him with deodorant?
Because he's got his shirt off was my only...
He's got his shirt off.
They were trying on...
Sure,
it's a dude
with his shirt. I get... Okay, and then so much yarn, so little time. Brasiers aren't made of yarn, to my knowledge.
I truly have no idea what that meant. And it was one of those things where, as I'm watching it, there's something about the style of this show, not just, like, in terms of the way it's shot, but also, like, what they're wearing and just kind of the general, like... coolness of the show, where when anyone says anything that doesn't make sense, I just go like, ah, that's just probably some 60s jazz.
Yeah, but it's like this whole episode is 60s jazz that I can't, that's like impenetrable to me.
Sure,
like,
sure.
There's so many more examples of this. Like, again, Sterling is the only one whose jokes make sense to me because he's like, maybe Eleanor Roosevelt will run. We'll strap a feed bag on her or something. It's like, okay, he's making a joke that she looks like a horse. I got that one.
Yeah, yeah,
thank
yeah.
Thank God.
So, yeah, yeah.
Don is talking to his mistress with the weird wigs, which... Okay, I guess she's like a bohemian, so she wears wigs, whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, the last time you were talking about TV, you ended with a harangue that should have ended with you banging your shoe on the table. I was like, okay, I guess that's a thing that people do when they're adamant, is bang a shoe on the table.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Just in general, if there's something I don't get, I go, this is a reference to some 60s thing that, you know, Matthew Weiner and the writer's room was just like, oh, remember the shoe on the table incident?
From the Smuckers Brothers Comedy Hour or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you just go, I just go like, yeah, that's probably, which I almost like, because it gives an authenticity to the show where, I mean, listen, I don't know if they're actual references to things from, you know, its era. I just assume it is, which makes me feel more like I am within that era.
Well, there's certain things in this where I give it a pass because I'm like, okay, I don't understand what that is, but it's a clear reference to something. Mm-hmm. Like when he says, you know, unless you want to get ptomaine poisoning, like I had to look up ptomaine poisoning, but okay, like I understood where he was going with that. Other parts, Don's talking about the doctor. When we walked down Park Avenue, I could hear the quacking. And you're like, okay, because he's a quack? Because
he's a quack, I assume. Sure. Yeah. But
that's
maybe
a
we
shitty line. That's me.
Yeah, maybe just a bad joke. I thought yeah. he was better than that. Yeah.
Yeah. With that one, I was like, well, maybe I don't know what the origin of calling doctors quacks
yeah,
is.
I was like, I think, but it's too on the nose or not on the nose enough. I can't tell. Finally, another line. Paul Kinsey, they're talking to the lunch cart guy.
Yes. Oh, I know
says,
exactly which one
says,
you're talking about.
He says, about. What's going on with that drape? It's sadder than a map. What the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea. I had to go back to make sure I heard that right. And I, yeah. then I looked at the, and I was like, is he talking about his coat? Like, what's going on?
I assume he's talking about the coat. And then the lunch cart guy says, you sure can talk, Mr. Kinsey. And I'm like, what?
Well, before
he
that,
said
even,
like one sentence. What is
even before that? He says it lets me know I'm at work, which yeah. also doesn't make any sense to me. Are you, is that your work jacket?
I think it doesn't look worky. I think that's what he meant. But then he says, "You sure can talk, Mr. Kinsey." And it's like he said one sentence. He didn't seem like a talker. Like
I don't.
This episode gets by on vibes, and I understand where it's going. Yeah, but like the dialogue is just like, okay, you just confused me with that.
Yeah, that made sense to me because it's so clear that that guy is trying to like bro down with the only black guy around. And yeah. then he's just kind of like, yeah, all right, whatever, you fucking dork.
Yeah, I think yeah. in
no,
terms
I got
of,
the vibe of the scene. Yeah. I just didn't understand the words no. didn't like, yeah. They didn't highlight that vibe. They sort no. of just undercut the vibe.
Yeah, detracted from it a bit. But I did enjoy the vibe of that scene enough to be honest. I didn't even like go back to, cause I wasn't sure what he said and what they were talking about. And I was just like, oh, I just enjoy the fact that he's trying to show Peggy that he's like, see, I'm cool. I talk to the blacks, you know?
yeah. No, I got, yeah. Which is like, I got the vibe of all these scenes. It's just the words that were meant yeah. to like put a button on that vibe. I was just like, whew, you and the whole Nixon scene, I didn't really understand what
oh, that was
they
just
were talking
set up.
About either.
That to me, watching it, because I'm rewatching it, I was like, oh, right, this is set up for the rest of this arc in which we're going to get, you know, Sterling Cooper is going to get into political campaigns. And of course, you know, the advent of how much television matters in modern politics now.
Sure. No, I understood where the plot was going and what it was meant to convey, but like the actual words where they're like, you know, he hasn't hired us, but he hired this other guy. And so what we're going to do, and Don's like, they already have a good advertising team and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, okay, so they're like auditioning to be Nixon's ad men, or they're going to do ads for him on spec. What is happening?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that I give a pass because I was like, I think I vaguely remember this is set up for something.
sure.
But yeah, I think that this episode suffers from, you know, sophomore album syndrome a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, this pilot was written and rewritten and rewritten. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
this was
yeah.
worked on heavily. Just like yeah. anything, any pilot is going to be tighter than when they pick it up and go like, okay, let's get the writer's room together for episode two. Mm-hmm. And they're clearly, you know, the trying to find some sort of footing. I don't think it's too outside of the, you know, realm of Mad Men, but I do think it feels like a lot of setup, and mostly again it's doing the thing where it's focusing on an ad campaign and how that ad campaign is actually asking a deeper question about Don's life, which is fine, but it is one of those things where whenever you see the formula of a show, you start getting annoyed at the formula of a show.
But it's just, it's odd because it feels like they had the storylines were there. They knew where they were going. But like the dialogue, it just seemed like he was just like, ooh, skibbity bop, skibbity bop, skibbity bop. And then you're like, what are you talking about? What are any of these people talking about?
Dude, it's jazz. It's about the sense that they're not making.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about the sexual harassments they're not doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That being said, like some scenes were good, notably mm-hmm. all of, Sterling's, but,
He rules. Yeah. Yeah, the second episode is almost always the worst episode of any show because, like Matt said, there's like the pilot has to be basically a movie to get people interested, and then mm-hmm. and then it's like, okay, shit, what do we do now?
Yeah. And then the third one, they sort of figure out like what it is a lot of times. Yeah,
right. And there's especially with this type of prestige TV format thing where it's like everything is a drawn out arc and an internal story that they have mm-hmm. to set up. And so episode two's the amount of setup for things is necessary. And it's kind of interesting rewatching this too, because this episode focuses heavily on Betty, who does not mm-hmm. appear in the pilot until the very, very end. Mm-hmm. And so you're wondering, okay, so what's this character going to be if this is your first time watching it? And I don't know if it's because Matthew Weiner comes from The Sopranos, but when she's like, oh, my hands are numb, and then she's driving and she has a panic attack, I was just like, okay, so Betty's going to be Tony Soprano. And then as soon as, she goes to therapy, there was that part of me that was just like, he can't make this a thing, right? It is just... You can't come from The Sopranos and be like, I'm also going to make therapy part of the show.
I didn't mind the storyline, like the broader arc of the storyline. It was just like, it was the logistics, because like they go to New York and it feels like Don Draper has an entire day away from Betty. And then it turns out like she was in the therapist's office for an hour, and it's like, okay, so she went to the therapist and he had time to like go bang his mistress and then like gallivant around the city
and write an ad campaign.
Yeah. And then they like somehow come home together. Like what happened there? Like, I don't get it. Make it line up for me.
Yeah. Maybe it's like in those days you could drop your wife off at a doctor's office and then they'd be done in an hour. And she would just obediently sit in a waiting room for hours.
She's sitting in the ladies' room.
Yeah, flip her a quarter and be like, hey, entertain yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Read this Reader's Digest. Logistically, I didn't even clock that. But yeah, mm-hmm. I loved watching what Betty was having anxiety about. It was actually almost like better than because Tony Soprano is better than because Tony Soprano's anxiety, by the end of the pilot is, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my family. And it's like, well, yeah. And like death and stuff. There's like, there's a lot of stuff that I
Your
know.
Your unfulfilled life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the you being in a therapist's office is funny because of course you have things to worry about, but what's interesting about Betty is it's much more nuanced, especially it's much more, like time focused, like based in its time, because Betty, we start off with her out to dinner with Roger and Roger's wife, and Betty is trying to get Roger's trying to prod Don about like his childhood. It's like, hey, did you have a nanny growing up? And Don's doing his thing where he's just like, my whole past is a mystery. And actually I have that clip. I'm gonna play it.
What about you, Don? Do you have a nanny?
I can't tell you about my childhood. It would ruin the first half of my novel.
Don doesn't like to talk about himself. I know better than to ask.
Just think of me as Moses. I was a baby in a basket.
A bastard from a basket!
And
what's that from?
What's that from? That's There Will Be Blood.
Oh, okay.
Just That's a bastard funny. From a basket.
Maybe you're not as obsessed with that movie as I am.
I am. That, for some reason, that wasn't like a line that I remembered.
Oh, yeah. You just remember all the bullshit.
I've abandoned my child.
I've abandoned my boy.
I love that.
I told you I would eat you.
What was I going to say? Yeah, so she's like looking at Don and realizing that she also doesn't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. And that kind of starts the spiral of like what's going on with this guy? Because, you know, the theme here in general is like women in America at this time were so dependent on their husbands that mm-hmm. to have their husband
who they married when they were like 19
when they were a teen, yes,
yeah, didn't know a damn thing about at the time,
and you can tell how ingrained it is when they talk about the divorcee moving in down the street and they're just like, Jesus Christ, imagine
that? Yes, exactly.
And it's like the real thing that's hard for me to imagine is being like an 18-year-old woman or whatever, however fucking young they were when they got married. They marry this like 22-year-old, whatever, 25-year-old dude who has never lived with another person before besides like his mother and has zero skills, like can barely dress himself, probably can't boil water, and you're just expected to do everything for
this disgusting
fucking pig.
Yeah.
Who won't even tell you like where he grew up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and yeah, that's an anxiety that of course I, as someone who's not a woman from that time period, wouldn't have even considered. And so like, especially that scene where, you know, she's talking, Betty is talking to her neighbor Francine, who's like the neighborhood fucking gossip, talking about, you know, how a fucking divorced woman is moving in and how her husband thinks that that'll lower the property value.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like as a person my age, like it's impossible for me to imagine marrying someone that I didn't live with first, because the whole thing about marriage is like, yes, you have to be boyfriend and girlfriend, but you also have to be roommates, and like you can be good at being one and not be good at being the other. And like the idea of them just flipping a coin and taking a flyer on it in the age when you like could not get divorced is just so wild. Like, of course they were all banging other people.
Yeah. And of course they were all like riddled with anxiety, especially the, you know, women, because they really were dependent. I mean, it was fucking make or break. You could have your entire life destroyed, you know, if a husband was like, I'm leaving you. And so you see that in the scene where she has a panic attack. This is after, she's driving and she sees the new neighbor, the divorced woman, trying to like move a large piece of furniture all by her little self, and she just like her hands go numb, and then she has like a slow moving crash in which she basically doesn't crash, she just lands on someone else's lawn. And so it's clear where her anxiety is coming from, and it's actually much more interesting than I think, you know. I mean, Tony Soprano's anxiety is interesting, but it was so meta.
He just falls down.
Right. Well, there's that, but also it was like, you know, the things that Tony was worried about, what he talked about in therapy is so detached from the reality of it, which was like, I'd go to therapy and I'd be like, I'm scared all the time someone's going to shoot me to death. Can I have some Prozac? Like, I don't think I would talk about anything else other than like, you know, I'm making some money and that's good. I had to do violence against this guy. I stay up at night.
There's lots of people trying to kill me, including my mother and uncle.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's just funny to concentrate on literally anything else when you are someone who's the head of a family in the mafia. Whereas like, you know, Betty's thing, I was just like, yeah, that would scare the fuck out of me too if I was a completely dependent on some guy who won't even tell me if he had a nanny growing up or fucking anything. Yeah. Like, yeah,
I mean, I think the nut graph of this episode, and you know, I don't think it's a strong episode of TV, but it is a really good slice of 1960.
Yeah,
it's Don and Roger sitting in their office, and Roger's like, you know, times are tougher these days. And Don's like, are they? Because it's like that question. It's like they live at the height, the peak of the American empire. Like, yes. You could just be a white dude and they were fucking handing you bags of cash and like a big, yeah. and a big shiny mm-hmm. car. Like you do whatever the fuck you wanted. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, shit is pretty weird. Like there's the Cold War. There's all this other, like you read through the newspaper and so much shit is happening. And also there are these like grown up, like kids who had to like just flip a coin and marry each other. And now,
yeah,
now you're like, all right, your husband and wife, you know, go get to it, kids. Like yeah. have fun.
And they're also, they seem to be realizing as like 30, 35 year old, 40 year olds that like, oh, my wife is like a sentient being who has her own yeah. thoughts and feelings. And now I gotta worry about that shit now
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Which is like, I mean, let's
they're probably
all be,
just competing with each other to do more psychiatry.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that scene, that one you're talking about, because it's Roger being like, it's just a fad. It's like a fancy stove. It's, you know, this season's yeah. candy pink stove. And it's, yeah. that's so funny to me because he's basically saying like, oh, it's, you know, it's just another one of these trends. But it's like, you fucking idiots make the trends.
Right.
You're
yeah, right.
the candy apple, the candy pink stove. You're selling people that. And these women are all trying to like. Process their feelings, and you're like, ah, it's just another trend, even though you didn't sell them that. That's the one thing they came to on their own, and yeah. you're still dismissing it.
Yeah, yeah. So there was no, like, you know, betterhelp.com back then, you know? It was just like, it's just psychology was a field yeah. of science.
There was just like worsehelp.slap.
Yeah.
Dot slap. Speaking of the great website, worsehelp.slap.
There would be like advice columns in the newspaper, like, how am I slapping my wife enough?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's leaving a lot of bruising. How do
she
I?
She seems awful hysterical.
How do I discipline my wife while making sure she's still pretty at the end of it? Speaking of great websites and BetterHelp, we need to take a quick break to sell you something, because you know what? Times have never been better. We've never been better. How could you not be happy with all of these products and services that are currently being pitched to you by whoever our ads guys are? Sometimes it's us. So please stick around. We will be right back.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
And we're back. Imagine yourself a man, Brent Flyberg, producer and guest. What up, what up?
What's up?
So yeah, we were talking about how times are actually great at this time. And Dawn is the one who keeps bringing that up. And you see that in Betty, too. There's a scene later where Betty is finally admitting that she might need to go to therapy because doctors keep saying there's nothing physically wrong with you. Please go to therapy.
Women would rather crash their cars than go to therapy.
And it's like it's interesting because the character is really great. She's apologizing most of the episode. She spends most of the episode apologizing to everyone around her for being a bother, which I can relate to a lot. And she also repeats like the line that he said, which is like, I know that everything is great and I have nothing to complain about. And I just feel like that is kind of it's interesting because that is a theme of the show and the series a little bit of just like, you know, these people think they have nothing to complain about, but you know what? There's a lot of things wrong in this era, which is true, but it is funny watching this in 2024 and kind of agreeing with Dawn, where you're just like, yeah, you don't know how good you have it.
When she's like, me and my wife were watching it, and when Betty says, "Can you imagine having to worry about money at this age?"
Mm-hmm. You're just you like, both put a gun in your mouth.
Yeah. Fuck
the
you.
Same reaction. Yeah. I was just sitting there like, "Yes, yes, I can."
Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah, I know exactly what it's like. God damn it,
I'm living it.
Yeah,
these guys don't even know what it's like to podcast.
Imagine if you were in your 40s and the entire industry that you worked your entire life for just fucking crumbled arbitrarily right. one day got and it didn't exist anymore.
Got eaten by an industry that exists to eat industry.
Yeah, cool. Imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, so you know, obviously. Human, you know, feelings or human yes, feelings yes, and frailty yes. is frailty and, you know, everyone's pain is equal and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's hard to,
but I, you know, but hard to I, again, not agree I also, with yeah, Dawn. I didn't have to like marry my second cousin when I was 19.
Right.
And,
right.
Yep, and then clean the skid marks out of his underwear either.
Right.
So,
or,
you know, I get it.
Exactly. Or, you know, be literally anything other than a white man at this time. Yeah. But yeah, no, Betty has every right to be freaked out because she literally at one point, and this is one of my, I think my least favorite lines of the show. It's just, there are certain things they didn't have to do is when Dawn is asleep and she's awake mm-hmm. worrying, which is yeah. like, that's enough for me to know she's worried.
It.
But instead yeah. she like goes, hovers over him and says this line.
In there,
a bastard from a basket.
A bastard from a basket's in there. That's who's in there. But yeah, so then she goes to therapy after, you know, she convinces Dawn that maybe she does need to go to therapy because she has this like spiraling freak out about the car accident she was in which she was thinking about, like, what if Sally had been hurt and not just hurt, yeah. what if her face had been scarred and she survived mm-hmm. and then she would have to live the rest of her life with a scar and then no one would ever want her. And then what would her life be? And it was just like yeah. so dark, you know, that Dawn was like, yeah, I'm going to pawn this off on some other people, dog. I can't.
Yeah. No, see, I think he was thinking, well, you know, a day in the city where I get to go fuck my mistress with her weird sure. wigs for a while doesn't sound half bad. I can go have a scotch at the office and just have a whole Ferris Bueller's day off ass day while she is in the fucking chair for an hour somehow.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of just his life anyways. You're looking at this from our lives.
Like, no, it's more just me being confused about the construction of the show,
okay.
But I get it.
Yeah, he's you know, he does that anyways, no matter yeah. what. And you think like, well, that is like kind of cool of him.
Also, the wigs on the mistress, like,
they don't really explain the wigs.
We could, I mean, we get that she's a bohemian. You didn't have to put like the world's ugliest wigs on her in like three different scenes.
Yeah. I also don't, like, I don't fully understand what That was she in a play?
Yeah, I was like, are she going to turn out to have cancer or something? Like, where are they going with this? Like,
yeah, you never really know.
I think she just wears wigs. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's the beginning and the end of it. Lady wears wigs.
Yeah, it's just fucked up.
There's
got to
be
like,
more.
Well, it just seems fucked up to me where you have this show where like half the point of it is all of the characters looking as good as possible, and then you just take one and you're like, hey, wear this fucking wear this like dirty mop on your head for some reason.
Maybe that's their idea of the counterculture, is like they just kind of look like shit sometimes.
But yeah, so Betty goes to therapy, and I really enjoy the therapy scene because it made it clear that it was not going to do a Sopranos thing. Because in my head, having not rewatched the show in a while, I was like, I forget, is that who she ends up with? Is it the therapist? And then the scene is great because he is doing, it's like the old school therapy setup. You're lying on a couch, not facing the therapist. The therapist could be doing literally anything. And in the scene, the only time he ever moves his pencil to write something down is when she says a symptom. She's like going through this, like all this anxiety that she's having about like the bomb and blah, 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 blah. And then she goes like, yeah, and I'm just having trouble sleeping. And he's like, okay, trouble sleeping. So it's clear that the therapy is just going to be her talking to herself, which I was like, okay, that's cool. And then it ends. And this is how the whole episode ends. But this storyline ends with she's feeling good. They're out to dinner, you know. She's just grateful that now she has someone to talk to, you know. And then he's like, "Oh, I'll be right back." And then we get the big shocking twist, and I have that right here.
I'll be right up.
Oh, hello, Mr. Driver.
Well, I had a very interesting hour with your wife this afternoon.
She's a very anxious young woman. I think you're doing the right thing.
The bastard from a basket!
Turns out he is a real bastard from a basket. The therapist is snitching!
Mm-hmm.
Snitch therapist. Who'd have thought?
I thought he was going to say, I had a very interesting afternoon with your wife, Mr.
If
Raper.
You know what I mean.
I gaped her like a jug band.
Yeah, no, he should have said that, but he didn't. So it turns out that the therapist is spying and is going to report to Don all of these things, which is apparently is not an uncommon thing. This was a thing. It might even still be a thing. Who knows? But kind of wild. What's weird to me about that is like that he would want to know what is going on in those sessions. Like, is he worried about her cheating or something? Because I also think like, you do know that.
I think he's worried that she's like a lemon and he's going to have to take her back to the wife store.
That she's crazy or something. Model. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you might be right about that. I was confused about it because I was like, you could also just ask her. And then I started thinking, well, maybe he's just like, oh, but she would just go on and on. Yeah. I just want to get the Cliff's notes from her therapist.
Yeah.
Which, sometimes he's a busy man. He's got Gillette to sell. Mm. Speaking of Gillette to sell, we now go into the office. Peggy's storyline and also, Dawn's storyline. So Peggy is at the office and it's like her second week. And she's talking to Joan. Joan's still giving her the rundown. Here's how things are going. Mm-hmm. And she sees Bridget, one of her coworkers, just crying in the bathroom.
That was so good. Just like the shot of Bridget crying. Are you okay? And she doesn't answer. And then they just leave.
Yeah. And then Joan is basically like, what are you doing? Get over here. Don't talk to a crying woman. That's just a weak person. And so, Peggy is kind of getting the lay of the land, and people are like trying to get her to like we meet Paul Kinsey for the first time. And Paul presents himself in the show as being just like he's the most snobby liberal that you've ever seen. He's just he plays it so perfectly too. From everything he says to his interests to the way he interacts with the like the black staffers, everything is just like about
chewing on the pipe as he walks around.
Chewing on a pipe.
He's a 60s version of a hype beast.
Yeah, you know, he's a 60s fuckboy too. Like, which is
a fuck beast.
He's a fuck beast. It's really interesting because you know, you kind of, you know, now the whole concept of fuckboy kind of exists. You think it's like a recent modern invention because it's like need to find out new ways to trick women into fucking us.
No, these are the old ways.
And so, you know, you think like, well, back in those days, you didn't need to do that. You just were like squeezing asses and going like, we're getting married now and you have to.
See, to me, Paul is less fuckboy. I think Pete's the fuckboy. Paul is more of an incel, like a proto incel than a fuckboy. Cause Pete fucks.
That's
Paul,
true.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work for him. Cause it's so obvious that he's such a gross little wiener.
Yeah, maybe so. I guess the way I was looking at it was the kind of, the way I'm defining fuckboy is someone who tricks you into fucking.
Thinking he's sensitive.
Yeah, and thinking that he's so sensitive. He's different than all the other boys. We start out seeing Paul Kinsey trying to ask Betty if she wants to like grab a bite to eat. And Betty, you know, says no, and then ends up getting taken out by all the other like sales execs. And when Betty returns, Paul comes back and asks like, oh, how was, you know, your outing with the Hitler Youth? And you're just like, you know, those guys are the Hitler Youth. He's not wrong about that. Maybe Paul is cool. It very much turns out he is not cool. And I have a clip of that.
You enjoy yourself with the Hitler Youth?
Oh, well, it was kind of last minute.
Easy.
Few moments later.
The office is going to empty out any second. We could push the couch in front of the door.
Paul.
Do you belong to someone else? Shit. I don't even like to sit in Don's chair.
I think we've misunderstood each other.
So... do you belong to someone else as being I mean, obviously the phrasing of it belong.
Whose chattel are you?
So, wait, has someone already purchased your vagine?
I don't see any brands on you.
Yeah, I was looking for a brand. I mean, like the belong is one thing, but also the like, whoa, what's wrong? Oh, it must be that someone else is dating you. As if, like, it would be okay if that weren't the case, you know?
That's the only reason.
You can sort of understand Paul's confusion in the sense that, like, we've established that this is a girl who kind of likes to fuck. She seems to enjoy male attention in certain situations.
Peggy?
Yeah.
Well, Paul doesn't know any of that.
Yeah, to be okay. But, yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's like she's with Paul. She seems to enjoy his company.
Right.
And she doesn't want to fuck Paul, but she does want to fuck the most disgusting misogynist in that entire building.
Pete Campbell.
Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a case of what do women want? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. And that is, you know, it is interesting that is the theme of this episode. I feel like that was on purpose.
Yeah.
You think they wrote it that
way? It might
have
been. That's great, though. That's what's up.
That's probably what's up. Maybe that's just my take on this episode. Is you know, I do a lot of like analysis.
They do a good job of making Betty like you understand. Sorry, Peggy. Not Betty, you understand Peggy, and at the same time, you understand why she's completely mystifying to someone like Paul.
Yeah, but I think, you know, to what you were saying, like. Paul, I do not think that Paul doesn't know that Peggy fucked Pete.
No.
Paul at most can read into the fact that she did go out to have lunch with those other guys and was like, oh man, they probably gang banged or whatever. I mean, he doesn't think that, but you know, he's may read into that as a sign of her being some like sexually active in
available.
Some way.
Available.
Or available. But I do think, to get back to your incel point, Brent, that he is reading into this woman is allowing me to give her an office tour. She definitely wants to bone.
Yeah,
for sure. Yes.
Because women, if a woman talks to you,
why else would she be showing off those ankles?
Right.
Yeah. Why That's a green showing, light, baby.
Showing them gams up. But yeah, you know, you feel bad for Peggy because Peggy is you know, has a scene with Joan at the end of this in which she just...
I mean, that's my other favorite scene in this.
Oh, it's so good. She just, like, she just, you know, she explodes, you know, like, she uses Joan as, like, a sounding board, just kind of, you know, yelling at her. And I love Joan's reaction, which is just like, what the fuck's your problem?
Yeah. Yeah, like, my take on this is... I don't know. This is maybe an extended metaphor, but yeah, like, I've spent a long time wondering, like, why every, like, martial arts guy or, like, you know, famous jiu-jitsu guy, like, why are they all, like, the worst conservatives with, like, the fucking, like, the worst politics that you've ever heard? And this is maybe... This is maybe like esoteric if you're not in the martial arts world, but like sort of the theory that I've developed is that like these guys spend their entire lives like trying to train the weakness out of themselves. And from there, it's like an easy step to just start resenting weakness in others. And then you sort of spiral into this like you spiral into all these kinds of different victim blaming ideologies of which, you know, which I feel like is the basis of like conservatism and fascism is resenting all weakness in anybody. And I see that sort of thing in Joan where you're like, oh, I thought she was like the cool chick who was gonna, you know, show Peggy the ropes. And at first she kind of is that, but she's also like, she's done the same thing, which is like, she's trained the feminine weakness out of herself, where her response to being sexually harassed is to, like, you know, give it right back to the men. And she's learned to survive in that world by being able to give as good as she gets in any situation. And when she sees like Peggy unable to do that, like, instead of her first response being to help her, it's to like resent that in her. It's like to resent the same kind of weakness that she's trained out of herself.
Also, it's interesting that what she says to her is like, you should be happy, like, you're an office eight. Real life you are a three, maybe a four, but out here it's like maybe four other girls and then you, and that's
that's part of her training, is like to absolutely maximize your sexual power and using that to your advantage in all situations, because you're like, okay, what powers do I have in this situation? They all want to fuck me and they all want me to be their mother. So I have to maximize this and figure out how to use this in this situation to my advantage. And she sees Peggy not doing that. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right. And it ties into, you know, the thing with Betty and her fears about Sally being scarred. You know, it's just like it makes it very clear that women were socialized to be like, what matters here is attracting a man. And, you know, if you're at an office in which you're an eight, you know, you should be thrilled because you might actually find a husband here. Like,
yeah, right? That's why you're here, right?
Yeah, right. What else is there? And so, yeah, there's something about like Joan's not resentment, but the way she scolds her is just so funny to me, because she's just can't understand, like, but you walk outside and no one notices you. Look at you. Like, it's so mean.
Yeah, yeah. It's harsh.
You should be happy is crazy. And also, another theme of the show, you should be happy.
This is slightly off topic, but did you guys watch La Bamba growing up, the movie La Bamba?
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I love La Bamba.
I watched the shit out of that movie, and like the first few times I watched Mad Men, like, I couldn't get out of my head how much Peggy looks like Donna in La Bamba. Like, the actresses look alike. They have the same hair and like the same, like the entire same style. It's like the first time I think the first time I saw Mad Men, I'm like, is that the chick who played Donna in La Bamba?
Can't be.
That was like 30 years ago.
Blue Diamond Phillips looks old as shit now. It can't be. Yeah. Well, anyways, I will
totally
need
off topic.
I need to rewatch La Bamba.
That was just like a
welcome
thing that,
to allow yourself a bamba. But yeah,
la
Mad Men. Necesito una poca de harassment. Oh, great. So, yeah, that is what happens essentially in this episode. The other thing I would point out is Dawn's arc of the Covenant. No, the narrative arc of we got to figure out what women want, and just kind of the journey, as many episodes will do, will take from we need a new ad campaign for this thing, and it ending with him like figuring it out by fucking. And I have the kind of a compilation of the what women want conversations.
We should be asking ourselves, what do women want?
I don't know. But I wish I had it.
He's gay.
You think they want a cowboy? Boing. He's quiet and strong. He always brings the cattle home safe. What if they want something else? Inside, some mysterious wish that we're ignoring. Let me ask you something. What do women want?
Who cares?
What do women want?
Well, one of the things has to be not being asked something like that.
What do women want? You know better than to ask. What do women want? Any excuse to get closer.
There's that ego people pay to see.
Now, is any excuse to get closer, is that the tagline of a product from the 60s?
I assume
it's got to be the deodorant, right?
Right, to get closer. I just want to. I want to know if that ended up being the Gillette's. No, I'm Googling it, and it just
you
seems
only
to
get
be,
Mad Men quotes. On
you
that.
Only get Mad Men quotes. But
maybe you have to not use Google, since Google is fucking broken ever since they.
They added AI to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I assume as, you know, the next episode goes on that maybe we'll get a little bit more on that, but I don't think so. I don't know. The point being that he spends the entire episode asking everyone around him what women want, and he ends the episode by paying a therapist to spy on his wife so he could find out what's
what
up
she
with
wants.
Betty? What she wants? Yeah. What does this bitch want?
One thing I can't do is ask her.
Yeah, yeah. That's
I bought
impossible.
Her a gold watch. What else do you want, lady?
Oh, yeah, you want a silver one too?
I want to know what women want without hearing them talk as much as possible.
Oh, that's just
he's him. He's so smooth in that scene where he's like I've been. What does he say? Something about like I was thinking like what you know who could not be happy with all this
right.
But I realized you don't have everything, and it's like okay, maybe he is starting to get it, and he's like bang, watch baby, there, shut up.
Yeah. He's like, what haven't I thought of? Yeah. Oh, watch.
Oh, more shit?
Yeah.
You need more shit, right?
She wants a watch. She's sad because she wants watch. She doesn't know what time it is.
She don't know what time it is. And she can't show everybody how young she is with the tiny little face on her watch.
And it's crazy because, like, it's funny the amount of projection that,
why does
like,
she got to know what time it is?
Yeah. What do you have to do? But I love Roger Sterling. Just kind of being like, what do women want? To compete with their neighbors. And and it's like, funny because it's like in some sense it is like a trope based in truth, but it is also just the essence of all capitalism. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're spinning it as a negative if women do it. just a level of fucking misogyny in that. It's just like,
yeah, we have to stimulate the competitiveness in them, but not in a way that makes us have to work harder as husbands.
Right. Yeah. And then when we watch them do that, we're like, disgusting, as you secretly vie for someone else's job. Yeah, it is. Listen, men are complicated. Times have changed, but classic man will never die. Slaps an ass. And yeah, that is the episode. Do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about, Vince?
I think we talked about, I laughed hard at What Do Women Want? Who cares? That was funny. And then the all the misogynist jokes that Sterling makes were my favorite parts, I suppose.
Yeah. Brent, favorite, least favorite, or something we missed?
I mean, my favorite scene we've already covered. There is one line that we didn't talk about, which is where he takes that first drink and he says, "That's where you've been." Great line.
Oh, yeah, that was a great line. Yeah.
And then the scene we didn't talk about a lot that I really liked is when Paul is pitching his like spaceman deodorant stuff. And my favorite part is he's like, because Don's like, "No, this isn't it." And he keeps being like, "Come on, look at it." Yeah. And he goes, "Come on, the guy's upside down, the can's right side up."
Yeah. One dog goes this way, the other dog goes that way. This guy's going, like, I don't know, what do you want from me?
What do you want from me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And he also says, who's this moon man? Who's this moron flying around in space? He pisses his pants.
Yeah. That was something I noticed was the kind of like the pre moon landing kind of disdain or mistrust of a spaceman. Where it was like spaceman was essentially just a science fiction figure. The fact that they were real ones, Don would just be like, gross.
Yeah. I forgot my other favorite part.
Yes.
Which is Sally.
Yes.
And
this
her
is what
friend.
I was going to mention. Yes.
She's like, "We're playing spaceman." And she comes to her mom with a plastic bag over her head. Yeah. And her mom's like, "Did you take that off my nice dresses? Like,
yes.
You go fix that before you suffocate yourself."
I loved that. There's two.
Why don't you go play in the abandoned refrigerator?
Yeah. No, there's two moments like that in this episode. One is her showing up in a freaking, dry cleaning bag, and you're just like, "Oh fuck, I forgot."
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that. And then when she gets in the car accident, she goes to the back seat and they're both just in the well of the car in the back seat, and they're like laughing, and I'm like, "Oh, that's right. This is like sort of pre-seat belts." And
yeah, the
also,
kid's just crawling all over as she's driving around and nobody cares.
I also think they may have been in the accident. They may have been pushed into the well, which is like incredibly dangerous. It's how most people die who aren't wearing seat belts in the back seat. That's how they die, is they just get sandwiched under the car. That's how Princess Diana died. But yeah, anyways, the just like, the way that kids were always at risk of death in the 60s, very funny to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, if I had to,
I also like the idea of, can you make sure your brother can't get out of his like play? What does she call it? The play fence or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you just, they were home all day with the kids, but you just like put up a plastic
made a cage.
In a crate. Yeah, crate trained.
Yeah, you put them, you treat them like a dog until they're old enough to get a job.
Until they're old enough to go to war. Yeah. And then if they make it back, then they're an adult, kind of.
Yeah, then they get to marry a teen.
Yeah. All the cliche parenting stuff where it's like, children should be seen and not heard. Like,
yeah.
Don't talk to me. Go away.
They kind of had it right. And yeah, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, solid B+. Vince, what did you give this episode? I got a letter grade.
Yeah. Again, I probably wouldn't. I'm surprised I kept watching Mad Men after this because, you know, the scenes made
you really
sense,
didn't like it.
Like 85% of the fucking dialogue in this episode was unparsable jazz scatting to me. And therefore, I give it a solid B plus.
Oh, shit. Well, sometimes the potato grows and sometimes it turns into butter in your mouth. And Brent, what would you give this episode?
Well, as we mentioned, second episode almost always the worst episode of the series, and I think probably this could very well be the worst episode of the entire series. So I can't in good conscience give it any higher than a solid B plus.
Wow, we're giving solid B pluses all around, but a solid A plus for this episode of Mad Yourself a Man, Brent Flyberg. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about Man
with us. You're so welcome.
Where can people find you?
They can find me at Instagram at Brent Flyberg. They can find me. They can listen to my podcast. Oh hell yeah! It's on Apple. You know, it's everywhere. Like, subscribe, review, all that stuff. And if you live in Los Angeles, every third Sunday I run a show at Nico's Wines called Sports. Please come out.
Oh shit, Nico's. I know that place.
Yeah, it used to be something else.
It used to be Inovino.
Yeah, now it's fancy.
Now it's nice. So yeah. Come out to that.
Know. The old name sounds cooler.
Yeah, no. It was,
yeah, I mean, kind of, but kinda, yeah.
Whatever. Shut the fuck up.
sounds all French.
Brent Flyberg, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Patreon.com/frogcats. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. And because we are pre-recording these things, before we, you know, start releasing them. Obviously, we do not have shout outs right now, but don't worry. Next episode, you will start to hear names, your names coming out. And instead
give
of
you a jazzy 60s nickname,
maybe what if you gave them like a brand, you know, you make it sound their name turn into a brand. We'll try
a whole tagline for every single name.
Yes.
We'll film you in between. It'll mix in with your everyday life. And
Vince,
then
I want you to work
tagline.
Hard
we'll,
for our
we'll
$8
talk,
patrons.
We'll talk about that.
All right,
okay.
You bitch. So once again, if you want to hear your name and or tagline and or brand name and or paragraph written by Vince about you, please go to patreon.com/frogcast and join the $8 tier. Pod yourself a shout out. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Thanks again, everyone, so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.